Hey.
Come on now. And now it's time for off-season reviews. And now your host, Rod or Cam.
Or both of them.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Off-Season Reviews with either Rod or Karen. Today it's me, guys. You guys got me, which means the show probably sucks because Karen doesn't watch anything that sucks. She bails on it. But I'm here, but I'm never by myself. I went and found somebody to help me review HBO's The Leftovers, a person that saw the show in a light that made me go back and watch it. It is actually Nina from Podcast Fandom, aka her website is Project Fandom, and on Facebook is facebook.com/projectfandom. What's going on, Nina?
Not much. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Glad to have you on the show. You know, we tried to hunt you down for True Blood all season.
I know.
And we just could not get our schedules together. But I feel like you got the better end of the bargain not having to review it twice a week, you know?
Yes. there were a couple of times I didn't want to talk about it on my show. So it was fine not to talk about it twice in 1 week. Yeah.
Well, I think we're, a little bit coming from opposite spectrums on the Leftovers. But I feel like we can both agree nothing's been worse than True Blood. So
no, that was like a wounded animal that somebody should have put out of their misery a while ago, but we had to like deal with it for 10 weeks.
Yeah. The only thing missing from True Blood was a special before it going, you know, it's really about the characters. No one really cares about the plot, you know, like to just like throw you completely off. Like, why'd you even watch this? But, all right, man. HBO's The Leftovers is a 10 episode series that is about, basically like a sudden disappearance or, almost like biblical terms, a rapture. Some people call it the sudden departure or whatever, but it's about a bunch of people, like 2% of the Earth's population just disappearing suddenly.
Right.
And the people left afterwards who kind of go through so many different like emotional and psychological effects from this disappearance. Mm-hmm. Let me get your overall impression of the season before we start going into like specific characters and episodes and stuff.
I really loved it. I loved it a lot. And the early on, they had said Lindelof, who was a co-creator of Lost, mm-hmm. or showrunner of Lost, had said that they didn't want people to focus on why or where the departed went. And so I think that kind of, for people like me, I like to know the answers. Like, I don't like ambiguous endings. Like, I liked Inception, but that whole spinning top shit, I was like, look, just tell me what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't typically like that. So I was a little nervous, but I have to say after the first three episodes, I think the series really got strong and I'm okay. I've just come to terms with, we'll probably never learn what happened really, like where these people went, but I'm so caught up in, like you said, the aftermath and watching these people deal with it. I think they've done it in a really compelling way. I think the acting was great. The music, like it was so much better than I expected. I truly loved the whole journey.
All right. And as far as I'm concerned, I hated it. I thought that typical Lindelof, like it's not for me. The big question of what happened it doesn't bother me at all, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of like Walking Dead, right? Like, we'll never know why exactly zombies start popping out, but
right.
Once it becomes like a staple of the show, either you're in or you're out. Like, you can't like start questioning like, well, when are the zombies going to stop? Like, no, there will always be zombies or we'll be watching something else. Right. So
right.
I don't mind the sudden departure thing. I don't mind the psychological turmoil that people go through and stuff. Like a lot of people had a problem with the show because it's so depressing. That's not my issue. My main issue is more like Lindelof's style over substance type of storytelling sometimes, where instead of answering a question that has a straightforward answer, you know, like it's either this or it's that. Sometimes I feel like he teases the audience to a point where I become disinterested in the question, you know, to where I'm like, all right, now I don't care anymore. You won. You know, that being said, the things I liked about the show, I thought the visuals were amazing. He's always a really, they were so good at capturing visual things, even little stupid stuff that it looks good in a trailer, but in the context of a show, it doesn't really make that much sense. Like when, Tom, Garvey goes into the pool and like screams and he's like, oh my God, you know, in my mind, like, look at all that anguish. And then when it happens, I'm kind of like, no one would do that, but okay. You know, like, did he sit his cell phone down first? I mean, but, so yeah, I thought it was beautifully, shot. All the like shots of the wilderness and all that stuff was just great. I really enjoyed, the way that they like, some of the inner dynamics of like the Guilty Remnant and like seeing how that cult slash whatever you want to call it worked out. I thought the acting was good. Like, I don't think you can blame any one actor for, like messing up the series. Like, I didn't even have a person that comes on screen and I'm like, oh my God, you're such a bad actor. You know, normally there's always one. And, I didn't get that this series. So, those are my positives. Let's, get into some specific characters here. all right. Let's start with, I guess my man Tom Garvey, since I've mentioned him already, played by Chris Zilka. Tom's story arc seems to be that the rapture slash sudden departure thing happened, and things were already kind of strained at home.
Right.
Apparently, his daddy ain't his daddy.
Right.
So there's some issues with that. He ran away and joined, the cult that is, composed basically of Wayne, the impossible black man, magical Negro, a bunch of Asian chicks, cause Wayne has a serious Asian, fetish.
Yes.
This is creepy all itself, but, so Tom goes off and joins this cult and then goes on like this adventure almost to, you know, it's almost like a biblical, like Joseph and Mary and this child, you know.
Right.
Adventure. What'd you think about his like kind of story arc?
So he was the, up until probably, I think it would have been episode 8. The Garveys at their best, where they did a flashback. So the whole episode was the day before and the day of the departure. And up until that episode, I really kind of thought I could do without Tommy, like the storyline, because it didn't really feel connected to anything else that was going on. And I mean, it was interesting in the sense that I wondered, you know, are Holy Wayne's hugs real? we debated that on our show a lot. And the show, I think, has been purposely ambiguous in that, which I enjoy. I did not mind that. But, you know, I wasn't really caught up in this guy knocking up a bunch of Asian girls and this kid being on the run to protect one. And it wasn't until the flashback where we see he has abandonment issues, you know, like, it's not just that they told him that Kevin Garvey wasn't his biological father, but that his biological father does not want to acknowledge him at all. And he could not let that go, like still showing up at the guy's house. And so then it became, okay, now we see why he is so, besides I think him being kind of in love with Christine, but wanting to protect her and her baby and just really kind of taking that seriously. Like, you know, a man shouldn't abandon his child. And he has a perfect example in his stepfather and Kevin of what it takes to step up and raise, you know, someone else's child. So it wasn't until like very late in the season that I started liking the character, and not just that he you know, the whole departure and, you know, that would just be enough to, I think, fuck up most people, you know, mm-hmm. dealing with that. But he also, they showed it really quickly in the pilot. He witnessed like a double suicide, I think, at his mm-hmm. college. And someone had asked him, like, why'd you leave college? And then he didn't answer, but we saw like a flash of his memory of him watching two students holding hands, jumping off a roof.
Right.
So yeah, I felt like he had a lot of shit to deal with. And by the end, I ended up liking him a lot and liking that story.
And he was there at the raid of the compound where mm-hmm. we found out that the government basically is like, if you're one of these guilty remnant type cults that popped up, they just go in and kill you. Like,
right, right. They changed the and we didn't realize this till kind of halfway through the season on our show. I think I read a review or something that the alcohol, firearms, and tobacco became alcohol, firearms, tobacco, explosives, and cults.
Yep.
Yeah, and they seem to be operating on some, like, they don't necessarily follow the letter of the law.
Oh, like, no. It was like everybody to them was an unarmed black man. Cause
yes.
They were just rolling up, pulling the trigger and being like, we'll just ship them into some body bags.
Right.
Well, yeah, I, the thing I didn't like about this character was how quiet he was the whole, like, first, like, seven episodes. Like, and it's not his fault. He just didn't get a chance to really act. Like,
right. Right.
You know, you have to give people a little bit of diversity in the script so that you can see like where the changes came. And then, like you said, with Garvey's at their best was the one where you're like, oh, he wasn't always like this, you know?
Right. Right.
So that was, yeah. I thought that his character arc was cool. What'd you think about him getting left with the black Asian baby?
So, when the dude from the Cosby Show in the finale was like, do you need help? Which I really love the scene. It's just, I say this quite a bit, when we talk about TV shows, that I always feel like, the simplest thing to do in acting is probably the hardest. Do you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's hard to do something simple, like sit at a table and eat a meal with like no dialogue without looking like you're acting, like right. You're sitting at a table, you know? So whenever I see simple scenes done really well where I don't feel like I'm watching acting, I love it. And I did love when he was just like, you know, do you need any help? Mm-hmm. And that whole exchange about, you know, do people ever say yes? And he says all the time. From that moment on, I don't know. I was just, I like the character of Tommy even more. So then immediately when he goes in, he has to scoop up this little Blasian baby that don't look like she had an ounce of Asian in her.
Right. That was the blackest Blasian baby ever. Like that, and the baby looked weird. So like when he picked it up, I thought to myself, like, am I racist? Cause I feel like this baby looks weird, but I don't know if I'm saying that cause it's black and Asian or just a weird baby.
I think there was something, oh God, forgive me. There was something a little weird looking about the, I mean, she was cute. She was chunky. She was juicy. She was cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is something, but she was healthy too. Cause that's supposed to be a newborn and that baby looked like 10 months old. But
it really did. That did not look like a prime dumpster baby at all.
No. When he scooped her up, it just, again, it just, I thought they did a good job of over time, and his was the slowest burn, I think, of the whole series, right? Oh, yeah. Of figuring out who he is and like what his purpose is, but it all made sense. And it was just like, I love the way he, when he's like holding her and he's trying to settle her down, but at the same time, he's rushing to figure out where the hell Christine went. And he's like pausing to like kiss the top of the baby's head. And, I knew then he was going to go home. I was like, there's no shame in that. Go back to mommy and daddy when they suddenly find themselves with child.
I even think the name of the episode was The Prodigal Son Returns.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this must be about Tom coming home in some mm-hmm. shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah.
And he definitely didn't know anywhere else to give that baby to. I thought him being left with the baby was going to actually culminate in him like coming home and not like delivering a baby to the doorstep. Like I thought it was gonna be like, hey, I'm back, by the way, got a black Asian baby, right. You know,
is my room still available?
Yes, long story, but right. Got a yada 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 black Asian baby. You guys got any room at the dinner table? But you know, that would be a little too neat for a show like this, so I'm guessing you know, that maybe something will happen with that next season. Speaking of Christine, what'd you think about Christine? Another kind of smaller character, but she was in like pretty much every episode. What'd you think about her story arc?
I thought, I cannot stand that character yeah. at all. She was so unlikable. Just, and I think we're supposed to feel sorry for her, you know, because they never said, I couldn't figure out if what they were saying was that Wayne, I know they said young Asian girls, but I don't know if that means they were underage. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference, right? Like she could be 18. And if he's 40, that's still kind of gross. But, you know, I couldn't remember if they were saying these were like teenage, underage girls that he was, you know, consorting with. But anyway, I feel like either way, she was supposed to be sympathetic, right? Because she's caught up in this guy's possible lies of being able to, you know, heal people with hugs. He's clearly telling them all that they're special. And we know of at least two that he was given the same lines to in knocking up. But there was just something about her that I couldn't feel sorry for her. And, you know, there's a scene in the hospital where she's, you know, yelling, and they understand that the cops are probably, or the doctors are thinking that he was abusing her, you know, while she was pregnant, and they're calling the cops, and she's throwing a temper tantrum, like, say it's not my fault. And it's like, we don't have time for you to be a child, you know? Like, I just didn't like her, and I sincerely hope we don't see her next season.
Well, she's definitely stupid, you know? Like, yes. They, like, if they got nothing else home this season, is that she's stupid, but, like, she's also kept in the dark. And this may just be, you know, because they say black doesn't crack, but yellow doesn't mellow. Like, Asian people age so well. I couldn't tell if she was supposed to be, like, really young, and we're supposed to be like, oh, well, she's just a kid, so obviously stupid. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right,
right. I'm going to roll with that because I just can't imagine, like, a grown-ass person that has paid a bill being as dumb as Christine was. Cause she was kind of kept in the dark, from a lot of stuff, even with, Tom. Like, when he goes and basically meets, like, a whole other family of, yes. like, a whole nother, like, white dude taking care of an Asian chick who's knocked up by Wayne, and, like, the whole thing kind of comes tumbling down on him. I don't know why it took him so long to realize that was probably what was going on. But, yeah. I kind of felt bad for her in certain stances, but when she left that kid was when I was like, I don't feel bad for you at all anymore.
Yeah, not a bit. And yeah. I mean it. I hope we don't. But there's, because I want to see more of Holy Wayne, and I don't know that we'll get that. Like, yeah. I feel like two of the most compelling characters on the show, and probably giving some of the best performances this season, were the actress who plays Patty. I think her name is Ann Dowd, and the guy playing Holy Wayne, and they're both dead. So yeah. I want to see more of them. And because not only is, you know, this, the material based on a book, but the series ended where the book ended, and he didn't write another book. So this is not based on a series. So everything going forward, even though the author is involved, you know, clearly with the show, it's not based on old material, you know, so it's all completely new stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we're going to have next season some flashbacks, because I do think there was a lot of stuff at Wayne's compound. Like, the only time we saw them there was a bunch of Asian girls, you know, sunbathing by the pool. It's like, well, what did they know? Like, did they know they were all sleeping with him? Were they, you know, were they supposed to be wives? And he was telling one was more special than the other.
Right.
So I don't know if we'll ever get that, you know, either through flashback or what, but.
And he got really standoffish when Tom was just like talking to Christine.
Yes, yes. He came in his room that night and was just like, I need you to, like, leave her alone. You know? So yeah, there's a lot there that I don't know. And the feeling that I got from this first season, though, is I don't know if this is the type of show like Lost where they rely heavily on flashback. You know, we had like one episode dedicated to, you know, a flashback, and that's it. So I feel, my gut is telling me we've seen the last of Christine and Holy Wayne. But there's still so many questions around that I'm kind of hoping they revisit it some way.
You know, I figure we'll see those people again because of Garvey's new powers. So, like, I don't think, like, I think this is one of those series where no one's ever going to really die. Because now you can always bring them back in some type of weird ass, like, talking to the dead moment. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I'm assuming, and he saw Wayne die, so now I feel like that'll be a thing.
Yeah.
I just hope he's not as greasy in the Flash when he shows up as a ghost. let's talk about Wayne Gilchrist, played by Patterson Joseph, and his story arc. I liked the idea of Wayne as super magical Negro who gives magic hugs that like clears everyone's conscience. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I believe in that as a concept, and it was one of the little things that bugged me, like, is this shit real, is it not, you know? Mm-hmm. Can you kind of break it down? But as far as playing the character, he was really good. I like that he has an English accent for some reason. Like, when I see a greasy ass nigga in a white beater, the last thing I expect to come out of his mouth is an English accent. So it's like, it disarmed the shit out of me, because I was just like, please don't let this dude be some black stereotype talking in Ebonics. And as soon as he's like, hey, mate, I was like, oh, shit. Like, here we go. So, yeah, I liked him. And they used him sparingly, I believe. Like,
yeah,
I felt like he was never in an episode for more than like 5 minutes, but I wanted him to be in every episode for like 30 minutes.
Exactly.
Which I guess is a good thing, right? Because it makes you like appreciate the character more. As far as his story arc, man, he was kind of a scumbag. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sleeping with all those little young chicks. Like, it's hard to root for a dude like that. Yes. Even if he has like these Christ-like powers of just like making people's troubles go away, it's still in the back of my mind like, dude, you're kind of a weird pedophile. And when he died, which was the weirdest like death scene I think of all of them, because, you know, it's just like, as far as Kevin Garvey knew, it could have been a dude having a difficult time taking a shit, you know.
I think his intestines were out though.
Oh, I think so too. I mean, like, if you remember the beginning of that scene, he just goes in and like wash his face, and then you hear like in the bathroom, and he's like, hey man, are you okay? And I was like, these are questions black people never ask. Like, you could be in there screaming bloody murder, and I'm like, I'll just go to the other bathroom or something.
Yes. Because he did look down and he saw his feet. There was blood.
Yeah.
So, but even still, I think I would have just been like, I'm going to go get some help.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't opening that door.
I would throw like an extra roll of toilet tissue in there with him. Like, here you go, buddy. I would call the paramedics. Good luck. But, so like him dying or whatever, you know, which kind of sucked, cause I feel like we won't get a lot of mystery solved with him necessarily. Mm-hmm. But, him dying and him saying like, I think I might be a fraud and wish for one thing. And, you know, I guess we don't know what the wish is going to be. And we don't even know if it'll come true, because we don't know if Wayne apparently turns out to be a fraud or not. But, I just loved his story arc. I was intrigued by it the whole time, and I felt like they gave us tiny answers with him, but they weren't like the most brain teasing things. Yeah. And it especially once you got the ATFEC's like new policy of kill every cult member.
Yeah.
Like, it made his character a little less scumbag, because like, oh, he's on the run because he's going to die.
Right.
And he keeps seeing that he's going to die. And he's trying to either spread the love as much as he can or avoid dying as much as he can. Right. So it was kind of like a more of a like, oh, well, he's not a complete scumbag pedophile. He's like half a scumbag pedophile. So what'd you think about Wayne?
So I think that what the show has done has been, like I said before, really ambiguous in terms of, could he do what he said he can do? And I think every time we saw it, well, we only saw him actually do it once, but every time we saw either, you know, where supposedly he'd done it again, there's questions there. Like I think it was a congressman that Tom mm-hmm. picked up and brought to the thing. This is before we really knew what was going on. And he walked in and the room with Wayne and came out and was like, I'm unburdened. And he was smiling. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Congressman Whitten, played by Brad Leland. The only reason I want to bring him up is because I loved him in Friday Night Lights.
All yes! Right. Yes, Garrity, right?
Buddy Garrity. As soon as I saw him, I was like, Buddy!
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Shit. Is he going to go recruit Wayne and give him uh-huh. to play tight end for the Panthers or no?
Peter Berg directed, I think he was like the producer of the whole series, but I know he directed the first episode and, you know, he did the Friday Night Lights. So that was cool that he brought Garrity in. But, yeah, so there was that. And then when they were explaining, and I think it was the start of episode two, right before they raided the compound, when they were, the agents were talking about why they're targeting him, they were saying that, oh, well, if it's, you know, some politicians have been known to go see Wayne. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, he could be, this could be like, you know, national security issue or whatever, you know, coming up with these bullshit reasons. But then the kid, the other white boy in the motel room said he got the hug and he's like, it worked, but he's also like, you know, shoveling coke up his nose.
Yeah.
So I felt like they kept doing it in a way where Wayne could, personally, I like the idea that he could do what he thought he could do, right? But he just also was a shitty person.
That's what, like, I'm rolling with. Then, like, especially with the reason I'm rolling with that is because it worked on Nora.
Yes. And that was my favorite scene of the whole series. I cried. That was probably one of the best episodes of the season with her and her whole, you know, her going to this conference. But that scene between the two of them, when he was like, look, I don't give a fuck about you. And I'm going to die soon. So you just need to make a decision. You know, do you want to continue to feel this way? And that whole thing. And he hugged her and the music. I loved it so much. And sure, we could say, well, it didn't really work. Maybe she was just ready to try to move on. So it was kind of like, you know, mind over matter. Like, she believed that his hug did something. So she's been acting in a way. Then she started sleeping with Kevin. So one could say, you know.
Mm-hmm. The Kevin dick.
Yeah, you know, made her happy. I don't know, but I like the idea of him being able to do what he says he's going to do. And then in the final scene with him when he died, I truly believe Kevin Garvey wished for his family back.
Mm.
Based on the fact that we see that before the departure, he was, you know, he had white people's problems.
Right.
He had a wife and a nice home and a job and, you know, money and all this shit. And he just was not happy. He felt like he was missing something. And he went out there and thought he found something he was missing. And then this shit happened and he realized, oh, no, I got everything I need. And if something happened to these people, I'd be devastated. But it was too late, right? Because then the family fractured after that. So I think what he was saying in the diner, it makes me think that when he went in that bathroom, that's what he wished for. And the fact that Wayne said, granted, with this look on his face, like he felt something, I choose to believe that he wasn't a fraud. Okay. And then when Kevin goes home, we see there's Nora, the baby, his daughter. So I think the theme of the series has been, you know, sometimes instead of focusing on what you lost, you need to focus on what you still have. And sometimes what you still have is just as good. You know, it may not be what you thought you wanted or look like what you thought you wanted. You know what I mean? So I don't, that's my whole theory on Wayne. I choose to believe the hugs were real.
And I think the Kevin dick theory is interesting because I feel like his dick makes all women go away. And I don't know why. You would think that it would be like good, but it made the one woman get raptured. Then it made his wife join the cult, which she can't even talk. And then Nora was going to leave town. It's like, man, like Kevin has the worst fucking luck for a handsome sheriff in a very small town with, which should be slim pickings, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who's getting all the ladies there. Maybe it's Wayne and the Asians, but, all right. So that was Wayne. And then of course my last thing about Wayne, why is he so greasy?
He's like Jermaine Jackson greasy.
For real. Like every scene is like he just walked out of baby oil or like he just ran like, I don't know, like half a mile and then did the scene. Like I want to see the behind the scenes now just to see like what his process was to be that sweaty and greasy in every scene talking to people. I hope he washed up before he had sex with those Asian girls. Cause like it was just gross, man. It was just gross.
True.
All right. Another person that was interesting. Hold on. I'm forgetting her name. She died. What was her name? Was it Gladys who died? No.
Patty?
Not Patty, her underling buddy.
Apparently. Gladys.
Yeah, Gladys. She was only in 5 episodes, so she's kind of a smaller character. But anything to say about Gladys and her death? Because I think it meant a lot to the plot.
Yeah, they. So we found. I had a feeling from the episode where she got stoned to death, which that was. I think this was the episode. It was after, probably after Nora's episode, and I wrote you, and I was like, "You need to go back because you had stopped. You said you weren't going to watch it anymore." Yeah,
I was smoking cigarettes silently, looking at all you fools while watching The Strain.
And I was just like, but that opening, I think this might be the Gladys, the title of the episode is Gladys. Mm-hmm. and the cold open includes her being stoned to death in the woods. And I think this might be the episode where I was just like, I'm on board. Like, I'm not leaving. I think from that episode, I suspected that that was Patty's work, that the guilty remnants had done that. And I think, so the first time I watched it, I didn't notice it. When I went back to watch it again to take notes for the podcast, there was a scene with her and Patty just staring at each other. And then she nods, you know, like Gladys agrees to something. And there was something about that when, you know, they'd hit her with a couple of rocks and she finally was speaking and begged them to not do it. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, did it anyway. I knew that it was a guilty remnant, and that's when I realized this cult was operating on a level like no one yet understood. Like, this is more devious than, you know, they're not being weird for the sake of being weird. And I felt bad for her. I never felt bad for Patty, but I felt bad for Gladys, that she clearly agreed to something and, you know, didn't quite know what she was getting into.
Do you think Laurie was in on the stoning?
No. Mm-hmm. I think her reaction was genuine, and I think because that's when she went into the panic attack and had to go to the hospital. And then that's when Patty took her out of town and took her to the diner, was talking to her and stuff. And I think the purpose of that, though, was for people like Lori, who may have been wavering, for people like Meg. I think that was calculated. It was to solidify that cult, for Patty to be able to say, look what they do to us. You know what I mean? To foster that whole feeling of us against them, to make it so that they would do things like put, you know, loved ones that look like the departed in these people's homes and steal the pictures to do that and do all this calculated evil shit, is justified now because it's like, well, look what they do to us. Now, you know,
you know what's weird? Like, do you think that meant Patty knew that the ATF-EC would come down on them and, you know, like, possibly try to, you know, kill them?
I don't think so. I felt like that whole thing with that felt like the way they operate is something that the audience knows, but the characters in the show are not yet aware that these guys are operating by. And like I said, John was like, my co-host John was like, I was like, it's like they're not operating by the book, you know, like you don't just walk into a raid and start shooting and, you know, call these young Asian girls that are running afraid cunts and, you know, like they were awful. And then you see what they did with Gladys's body. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, it was a murder. There's no investigation. They just shipped her somewhere and cremated her. I think that was for us to know that this world has changed. And John was like, they may be operating by a book, but it's just, you know, a different type of book. Like, you know, like the Patriot Act, where they have like purview to just do whatever the fuck they want because, you know, and justifying it in terms of national security. So yeah, I think that I don't think anybody on the show really understands just how this new agency works. I think that was for us to realize that they're on some like next level shit.
Yeah, I wonder if the detective who basically ratted it out, I think his name was like maybe Lewis or something. I wonder if he knew that's what the ATF was gonna do. Like, was he undermining Kevin? Because Kevin basically was like, look, we need to investigate this murder and you know, it's kind of a local thing. And so this guy calls the ATF immediately, goes over Kevin's head. We find out, I think, earlier that that dude was always a dick. But, you know, like, I wonder if that guy knew, like, well, they'll just fucking kill him and, like, we won't have to worry about this shit, so fuck it. Or if he just was, like, that inept at his job.
I think, you know what? I actually think, and we said this in the flashback episode, I came out of that episode liking everybody more, including Lori, who I hated, but I felt so bad for what happened to her. I still don't think it excuses, you know, abandoning your family to join a cult.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't, it's one of those things where I feel like, you know, unless it really happens to you, you really can't judge too hard. You know, the whole fetus disappearing out from inside of her.
Right.
But in that episode, I came away liking everybody more and liking Kevin less. And I said then, I feel like that guy in that episode, when the father, you know, his father was still the chief at that time, I kind of felt like Kevin was a shitty cop.
Mm.
And before, I think we thought that other detective was just a dick, just to be a dick. But now I'm wondering if Kevin was just kind of like, you know, the chief's son, not really capable. So the other cops maybe resented him a little bit and just was like, you know, we all know you really shouldn't be here. You're not that good. You know, because the whole thing with the deer and the way he was teasing him. So I don't think so. I think that – I don't think he knew. I think he was just trying to be – go over Kevin's head, because there's like that residual thing where I feel like some people maybe didn't feel like Kevin should be the chief.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Like,
you
I earned this desk and you got that position because you got grandfathered in, basically, because your dad was the chief. Yeah, I could definitely see that, man. And that's a good, that's an interesting take too. Yeah, so Gladys dead, it burned, so she gone. What'd you think about the twins? I thought they, like, I don't know what made them cast those weirdo looking twins. There has to be some more normal looking twins, but I thought they were pretty good, like, comic relief.
Yeah, they were.
In a show that is very, very somber. So,
yes, yeah.
You know, seeing like a couple characters that made me laugh even a little bit was kind of cool. But like, I guess by proxy, all of their like little crew of friends and stuff, those like, okay, maybe it's just me and maybe it's because I don't have kids or I was raised a certain way. I just can't imagine kids like this, because the kids are like a little too savvy for small town kids, but a little too stupid for like, or too weirdly written for like what I think most teenagehood looks like. But I might just roll in different circles, but like the phone game where they're like jacking people off and
breaking
into someone's house and seeing that they have a gun and like little weird shit where I'm like, yeah, that, I don't know. I guess maybe these kids do that now because of the tragedy that happened, but I can't imagine like kids doing some of the shit they did.
I feel, yeah, I'm torn on this, honestly, because I think, you know, we all read shit on Gawker where kids just do some, like, you know, those two teenage girls like torching that tortoise, you know, like, you know, trying to set it on fire and all this stuff. I mean, like every now and again, you do hear about teenagers doing really shit that you're just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know?
Right.
So I feel like it maybe wasn't that outlandish. But I think what the show is trying to say that this whole event, that I think what they were trying to say was these kids maybe weren't always that way or always this fucked up. They
so like
were probably
all,
just.
So like all the kids have become Gawker kids.
Yeah, basically, at least the ones we saw. But I will say by the end of it, I thought characters like Amy, the best friend, who I was sure was fucking Kevin. I was so sure. I think that, you know, because I didn't like her at all. I thought she was a bad influence. And then by the end of it, I think what we saw was that she was just really trying to tell Jill, you know, appreciate what you have, like, you know, and let your dad move on. You know, he could be happy if you would just let him, you know?
Yeah. What do you think Amy lost? You know,
they don't say, but she was never home.
Right. It seems like she either like lost her family, or if not her family, like something happened that made her family like completely break apart to let her stay with the Garveys all the time.
Yeah, so I don't know if her, you know, they were departed or if her home was already kind of, you know, shitty, you know, before that happened. I don't think they've ever explicitly said, but yeah, she was staying there, and it was like three or four episodes in, I was like, doesn't this girl have a home? Like, why is she always at their house?
And why, what does she have against bras, you know? Staying in this house with this widower's kind of hot dude. Put some underwear on, lady.
True. It was a very much in. Like I said, I just thought I was early on. I was on the whole Kevin is blacking out and having sex with that girl while he's blacked out and doesn't remember it. I'm glad to see I was wrong. But
I hope so. I mean, we That's the thing about this show. I don't think anything is conclusive, and it could be right. We don't know. But with the twins, I will say this. They're the most teen acting of the teen actors. You know, to me, they came the most across, like, still kind of goofy and awkward. And some of the other teens are a little too, and I guess it's because of the Rapture, but they're just so, like, kind of jaded and cynical and, like, grown a little bit. And I'm just like, okay, I guess, but, like, there has to be some difference between, like, angsty ass adults and angsty ass teens in this world. And I felt like the line was, like, kind of weirdly drawn. But the twins were cool with me. And I enjoyed their hijinks as far as, like, saying, we shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do this, and then doing it anyway.
My favorite twins line was when they were in Nora's house, and Jill went upstairs to look for the gun, and they found the bulletproof vest, and one of them put it on. And then one said, do you really think Amy fucked Jill's dad? And the other one goes, probably, he's ripped. And I loved it. I loved it because it wasn't like, probably, Amy's kind of a slut. It was like, I do him. Look at him.
Like, who wouldn't fuck that dude?
You know? That was my favorite twins moment.
Yeah, that was cool. Speaking of Amy, might as well do her now. We never know what she lost. But the way she's, like, introduced, when she's just, like, living there, for the longest, I'm like, so is that, like, her sister? Or... like, they have, like, a cousin they took in or something. Because, like, they really don't explain shit for a little bit. Where it's just... and then she becomes kind of a fixture. There at the house. And she's so, like, teenage, like, teenage slutty, if you know what I mean. Like, where it's not, like, a grown woman going, like, I'm going to get some dick tonight. Let me show you what I got. It's more like, I'm just a teenager going into my body. Maybe I'm just not wearing a bra because it's comfortable. Or maybe I'm not wearing this bra because I like the way your daddy looks at me. I can't tell. You know?
And they were like that. You're right. It was, I think, again, on purpose. So you really couldn't tell. But by the end of it, there were a couple of things that I felt like if she were sleeping with him when he was blacked out and not being able to remember it, that I was looking for. So, like, when he first started dating Nora, and he didn't come home the night before, and Jill's, like, you know, asking me about in the kitchen, and he says, yo, I was with a friend, I think you'd like her. Amy's reaction was like, whatever. You know, she was eating her pancakes. She was like, you know, and then at the dinner table with Nora, she didn't seem jealous or anything. And I think by the end, it was clear that she was, you know, she just wanted to have a family. Clearly she didn't have one. And it felt like she was, like, when she said, when they had that last big fight, and she said, you know, I think, why is it so hard for you to believe that somebody could go through this and be okay? And even, I think your dad could be okay if you would just let him.
She even told Jill the one time, like, well, when you go out, your dad goes out. I think you spend time with Nora. Like, you know, like, hey, your dad has a life too. And, you know, he's moving on.
And I feel bad. I feel bad that, you know, that that whole thing happened. You know, that they, the friendship, I hope we see more of her because, like I said, I thought she was just a little slutty teenager, but then by the end of it, I was like, oh, she's probably, like, just, you know, and you've had that. Do you remember when you were a kid? I feel like I've experienced once or twice where you have a friend that complained about their life and their parents, but then you would hang around them and be like, your parents are actually kind of fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. We call those people white people. Like, these are not problems.
You're just like, I would kill to have your problems.
Like, will you want to switch parents? Because mine can go in kind of hard, man. I heard you got fussed at today. Oh, for you.
I got my ass beat.
I got hit with a belt. So I would switch.
That's how I, by the end of it, that's how I felt. That she was just kind of like wanting to. But because that was her friend, she wasn't coming straight out and saying, Jill, you need to just grow the fuck up and realize how good you got it, you know?
And I really liked Amy by the end. I started off hating her as well. Cause it's like, go home, you know? It's just like, it's like Steve Urkel, you know? It's just like, don't you have, like, a family that should love you or something? What's the problem? But, like, she, and especially because they don't hint at, like, any sort of trauma or abuse that she went through. Cause she seems pretty level headed. Like, you know, normally with a character like this, I would expect them to be like, oh, no, no, no. you have an episode where you're like, oh, something really bad happened to her. Mm-hmm. But she didn't really seem to carry that with her, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Which maybe that's why her character's like, look, you need to get over shit because I'm over my shit. But she was like so cool, and I would have loved to see like a flashback of her and Jill before. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what they were like, because Jill in the flashback seemed to be much more well-adjusted and happy and like childlike almost.
Yeah, she had braces and she was singing and just hugging her mom. Yeah, she kind of, in the flashback, she reminded me of my daughter.
Right, and she even loved her brother, which is rare, you know, at that age, where, because, you know, normally that's about the age where like the older brother and the sister aren't as cool because they're both coming into their own. Right. But they were like, you know, holding hands, like, let's go have fun together.
Right.
And it's like, wow. So I wonder if Amy was holding on, hoping Jill would like come back to like, cause you know, her whole arc seemed to be like, yo, you can get over this shit. You know what I mean? Like you can start the healing process of being better. Mm-hmm. And Jill shit was like, no, you can't. And not just me, nobody. So. Right. Don't even try that shit. And Amy ended up having to leave the house. And their goodbye was like a little less dramatic than I thought it would be. Cause it was really like matter of fact, like, well, I'm leaving. It's like, well, you are. Well, goodbye. Yes. Goodbye. Close the door. And I was like, okay, now Jill's going to break down. Jill's like, so I'm in the house all by myself. What's on? What's on TV?
Yeah. I feel like those are those things that, like, when you're a teenager, you don't know how to have those moments. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's like the type of shit, like maybe a few years later when you realize, man, I probably, you know, Amy is no longer your friend and you're like, man, I could have handled that better. But I was, you know, I was 16, 17. I wasn't emotionally equipped to say I was wrong. Please don't go, you know?
Yeah. You know, that just reminds me, because I'm thinking about how much teenagers watch TV. I really wish they would have went into how TV changed. Cause like, it makes me wonder, like, are reality shows even a thing now that everyone's kind of living a reality show of like fucked up, like emotions and turmoil? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Little stuff like that. I was just like, man, it would have been cool. But, all right. So let's move on to another character. This character is my Wayne. I know you have your Wayne is your Wayne, but my Wayne was Lucy Warburton, the black mayoress of the town. Just not enough screen time, man. Really needed her more. I hate in the last episode that she's reduced to being like, you're right, white man, my bad. Like, I liked her as, you know, I understand she's not in the book or something, or they split the personalities or whatever, but, I liked her kind of on her own, and I wish she would have got more of a background, because fucking Kevin Garvey's dad is just not enough for me. Like, I feel like she needs to be pulling more men in this town, number one. Number two, she was right about a lot of stuff, and it's not like Garvey ran by and was like, shit, you was right, my bad, you know? Like, and plus this motherfucking Kevin Garvey be late to meetings and shit. Like, she was right to get in his ass, and I don't understand how that character kind of got just kind of pushed to the wayside. Now I don't know what they're gonna do with her next year. I really hope her saying you were right isn't the end of like everything with her. But just totally underutilized. But I loved the actress Amanda Warren, and I liked what they showed us of the character. What'd you think about Lucy?
I liked her too, and I'm always interested when they have a character in a TV show or a movie that's based on a book, and they weren't in the book or the book, and it's like, okay, well, you created this character for a reason. Why? You know, it's kind of exciting. So when I learned that she wasn't in the book, I was like, oh, there must be some good shit coming, but there really wasn't. I like the idea of her relationship with Kevin's dad, just because look at them. Like, those are two people you would just not expect to be fucking, right? Like, and so when we had the flashback episode, I liked when he came in her office, because I was like, oh, okay. I kind of see it. Like, he's not my type, but he was clearly like into her and flirting, and you know, it was kind of adorable. But yeah, that was it. Like, she was very matter of fact, which I loved. Mm-hmm. I loved when, you know, she, when the episode, with the baby Jesus was missing from the nativity scene and she gave him the money and he was like, what, why would I do that? Why would I go buy another doll? She's like, 'cause you need a fucking win right now. Yes. Okay.
Oh, I love that scene.
Yes.
She was right.
Yes.
Like he wasted a whole lot of time finding that actual baby Jesus. Like, nigga, just go buy this doll, throw it in some dirt, put it back on there.
Right. And have the people, right. You know, this is, you need a win. All right. 'Cause right now public perception is everything. We just had this big shit storm at the Heroes Day thing where the Guilty Remnant showed up and a fight broke out. Like, you need a win. Go buy a fucking doll and get it over with. So like, I love that about her, but you're right. It was like, they, at, in the end, they didn't really utilize her a lot. So hopefully they'll fix that next season.
Yeah. I mean, she could have been a good influence and not just good influence like on Kevin, but I mean good influence for the actual show. It added a little bit more reality to it, especially like just this idea of like a person who's over Kevin and kind of watching him. And like, I would love for her to be like, yo, you seem like you've been like freaking out a little bit, even getting drunk at the bar. You know, there's reports of you, you know, doing some crazy shit. Are you okay? Just like a little bit more of that, I feel like would have been dope. And I don't care what it is. I just don't see it for Scott Glenn as Kevin Garvey. like sexually, I just do not see her ending up with him. I mean, I'm sure there's not a lot of choices on black people meet in that town, but, something gotta happen, man. She could do way better than that dude.
Oh, but you know, I just want to say real quickly, I haven't read the book, but my friend and co-host Megan had, and she had read another one of Tom Parada's books. And I think they based a movie on it. And supposedly it's really disturbing. But she told me that his work is often criticized as being too white. Like he writes about white people with white people problems and a white world. It's just white, white, white. So I find it interesting that for this, and I went on a bit of a rant after maybe two or three episodes of it, because I was just like, look, this show better not be about a bunch of white folks' problems with no res, you know, like these ambiguous, deeper meanings. Yeah, no, I'm not here for that shit. And then I, like I said, it got better for me. But I find it interesting though for this, Wayne in the book is a white guy and they cast a black guy to play him, and that Lucy wasn't in the book at all and they wrote a character and then they got a black actress to play her. So I have fingers crossed that we'll see more people of color and that this won't be like previous Tom Parada projects where it's just super white, you know?
Well, here's the thing I like about the black people in this show. They're white people. And I know that sounds weird, but that to me is equality when you just write a role and it's like I would not have been a fan of Lucy at all if all she would have been doing is speaking in sassy Ebonics.
Yes.
I would have been done with the show. Like, fuck you, never coming back. Like, the one black person just happens to be, you know, a stereotype. Like, I just like that she just happened to be a black actress that was speaking the part and the roles and the lines in, you know, in her own voice, but no, like, you know, catering or pandering to like black people. So.
Right. And there's no mention. There's not like, you know, a very special episode.
Right.
You
know, yes.
Yeah, this black woman is the mayor and she was having sex with the white police chief. That's it. And nobody mentions the race.
No one like pulls her over in one special episode or.
Right.
Or Kevin pulls her over like, you know what you're doing? Oh, damn, it's you. My bad, Lucy. Go ahead. we do this sometimes.
Right.
So, all right. Speaking of, other characters, Nora Durst. We're getting close to the top here. What do you think about Nora?
Love her.
Mm-hmm.
Love her, love her, love her. I thought she was going to be a bit of a weirdo, like in terms of she was, but you know, like the first time we really see her, she gives the speech and she talks about losing her entire family. And then the next episode, she purposely knocks over the coffee cup in the shop. There's a gun in her purse. I was just like, nothing good's going to happen with this woman. But by the time we got to, the episode with her going to New York for the conference, her acting, Carrie Coon, she's in Gone Girl, which is a movie coming out, I think, next month. Ben Affleck. I read the book. It's great. I'm just excited that she's doing other stuff. I hope she doesn't leave with that little Blasian baby because I want to see her next season.
Me too.
Yeah, I loved her. And like I said, some of my favorite scenes in the whole season, most of them, it's her. She's in it. Her and Holy Wayne. her when she sees those loved ones that the guilty remnants put in her house, even when her family disappeared, you know. And I'm a mom. I've had those moments, like, where the kids won't shut up and somebody just spilled shit on your carpet for the fifth time, and mm-hmm. you're waiting for this call about a job. And, you know, I never felt like she was acting ever.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't, the baby dropped her phone in the water. So it's like, yeah. At that moment, you just know her inner monologue is, I just wish someone would come and take all these motherfuckers out of my life forever.
Let me ask you, because I know they say we're never going to know, yeah. but do you think it's possible that the people who left were at a point where somebody was either regretting their existence or wishing them away? Because I don't think Lori was in a good place with her husband. Clearly, they just had that fight, and there was a reason she didn't tell. Like, I'm married. You're married. If Karen got pregnant, you would be the first person she would tell. Right. And a healthy, loving marriage, when the wife finds out she's pregnant, the first person she tells is her husband. But for some reason, Lori didn't tell.
And that baby was quite a ways along. I don't know if that was just like,
no, TV, it was
TV thing. Like, it's just, well, for the purposes of TV, no one's going to recognize this blob or what.
Right.
Like, that baby, like, a fully, I was like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah,
she should, her stomach should be way out.
Well, the doctor said when she called her and she had, she didn't keep the first appointment, she said, we are reaching the point of no return. Like, you got to make a decision. So she was fairly far along.
That baby was doing ABCs, I thought I saw in the background. Mm-hmm,
doing homework in the womb.
Yeah. You know, that is an interesting theory. And, I've never thought about it because I don't know. I didn't know that Lindelof said we weren't going to find out what happened. I just assumed we weren't. So I haven't even given thought to being like, what could be the cause? So, but that would be interesting if that was a cause of just, you know, cause like the one woman's baby is crying in the pallet.
Yes.
And, you know, Kevin Garvey, I could assume, like, might even be regretting fucking this lady as he's doing it. Like, this is not the right thing to do.
Right.
So yeah, I could kind of see it that way. But my thing for Nora, first of all.
Yeah, go ahead. What do you think of Nora?
Carrie Coon, superb actress. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, she went from, like, completely disturbed and, like, weird, and to a point where when she does get the hug and everything changes for her, you feel the weight lift off your shoulders for her. Like,
yes.
Holy shit. She's solved. Like, apparently some people don't have to be angsty in this show anymore.
Right.
And it wasn't like this unrealistic, like, I'm skipping and the sun's shining, but it was just kind of this, like, I'm back to what I was before.
She's grocery shopping and she's no longer buying the same, replacing kids' cereal for kids who are not there and coming back. Like, she was actually buying food for herself.
Right.
Yeah.
Even the part where she's taking care of her brother's wife and Jill and I think Amy come in or something.
Lori and Meg.
Yeah, Lori and Meg. I'm sorry. Lori and Meg come in and she's kind of like in a polite but not so polite way, like, why don't you go check on your husband? Anyway, let me get back to doing what I'm doing.
When she turned the hose on them.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, man. I really loved her character. It doesn't help that she was hurt that she was easy on the eyes. Mm-hmm. Cause I didn't see like a nude scene coming with her, but, it was one of those things where like, I didn't see a nude scene coming with her because the character had like zero sex appeal before. Mm-hmm. She got like happy, you know what I mean? Like, which means she's a good actress. Cause the fact that I'm looking at this screen for 6-7 episodes, I'm just like, yeah, man, I just hope she didn't kill herself and then go to like, is she gonna pull her titties out? What? You know? So like, she was really good, man. And even like kind of how like in the last episode, we don't get to fully experience it, but she like has that moment where she regresses all the way back to the moment. Mm-hmm. She lost her family and it's just in that silent agony for like 60 seconds. Like,
yes.
And they come back and she's sitting at the table holding the fake plastic doll kid's hands and shit. And you're just like, oh man, she was so close to the Super Bowl and she's going to go all the way back to zero next year, man. Oh, but yeah, big fan of Nora. Her gun and all that stuff. Oh, and the scene where she got shot by the prostitute.
just like, I was like, what is happening? Why is she doing this?
An untrained prostitute? Maybe she just knows prostitutes are probably good with guns. Like, she's just like, you know, don't lie, bitch. You shot somebody. Come on. You don't get that far in the business without killing a man. So just aim for the chest. But I was like, this could go horribly wrong. Like, someone just panics with a gun and shoots you in the head. Next thing you know, you're dead. But
yeah, when she was telling her what to do, it was after she turned up the music. So she had to kind of yell. Yeah. And she's like, aim right here. She had her hands like at, and I was like, move your hands for this right. bitch to get happy and shoot your hands.
Shoot
off.
You right through the hand, let you bleed out. Cause she ain't staying around. Ask David Carradine how that shit goes. The prostitutes do not stick around.
Nope.
All right. Jill Garvey, we kind of talked about her a little bit when we talked about the teens, but Margaret Qualley did a good job, especially once they did the Garveys at their best, because then you see the transition. But I'm not gonna lie, I didn't like her before that, because her character was just so monotone. It was just one sad, somber, like Daria beat the entire show. And it was such a drag. Not that, like I said, not that she did a bad job. It was just such a drag on the show to me, because I didn't care about her problems in relation to like how big everyone else's problems were.
Right. I agree.
You know,
it's one of those things that you don't get it till you're not a teenager anymore. Mm-hmm. I hear this so many times in other podcasts that talk about TV shows. Teenagers are assholes.
Yeah.
For the most part, you really are a bit, even the best teenager. My daughter is brilliant, love her to death. Every now and again, she could be an asshole. She could just, she'll do say some stuff and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna let you have that because this is hormones, you know? Mm-hmm. So typically teenagers are not that likable on TV. And I felt like that's what we were getting with her. We were getting, typical teenage shit, but amped up to a million because 2% of the world's population disappeared. Her brother is off somewhere doing God knows what. And her mother is a local cult member. Like, she couldn't even take that shit out of town. Like, she couldn't go.
Yeah, I gotta be a cult member up the street. Damn.
Right. Right. I gotta see my mama in her white jumper smoking Newports on the corner every fucking day. This is awful. Life is the worst. So I gave her a bit of a pass. But again, that Garvey's at their best episode. At the end of that, I liked everybody so much more than even Patty to some degree, because you find out she was like in this abusive marriage and he kicked her out of her own house and all this stuff. But yeah, that's when I realized that what she'd done something really special with this character, because she could be like two completely different people. You know
what else is crazy about that character? Because Garvey's at their best happened so late in the series, it made me forget the unrealistic bullshit they did with her in the party where she chokes the dude when he jerks it, and then a tear comes out of her eyes. It was such a like Lindelof like style over substance. Like, look at this shot though. It's a young girl in her underwear. She's crying and she's like choking a dude and he's jerking off. Isn't that like the weirdest thing you've ever seen? You're like, people don't do things like that, you know? But whatever. Not her fault.
Right.
But I thought she did a great job. And like you said, after that one episode, you're like, oh, and that's why she's cool. I do like that she took care of that, that she wasn't as scared of the dog as her dad was.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, just kept it. It's like the power of her somberness was just like too much for the dog, even.
Yes.
Like the angriest dog ever. And then she comes out and it's just like, da 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 da. Oh, hey, Daria. I guess I'll just calm down and eat.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Meg.
Oh, God.
Is it a rule since Family Guy that all Megs must be annoying as shit? Because she was annoying as shit.
She was so. I will say this, though. I think Liv Tyler did a great job acting. Mm-hmm. I will say that. But Meg was the fucking worst. I swear I told my co-host, I was like, you know what? I think she was like this before her mother died. Like, I think that this is somebody who was probably suffering from something, some sort of depression, and it went untreated, because she was the worst. Oh my God. She was so hateful.
And her fiance didn't seem bad. Like, I was kind of hoping like something would come where she'd be like, well, you weren't saying that when you were cheating on me or something. And I'd be like, oh, okay. I see. Mm-hmm. You gotta leave sometimes, Meg. But it was like, dude really was like, bitch, I loved you. Like,
yeah.
where's my ring? Like, and he even got mad with the sheriff because he was just like, how the fuck can you allow this shit to happen in our town? Like, yes. Your wife is over there, my fiance is over there, what the fuck are you doing? yeah, I didn't like Meg specifically because she did seem so half-hearted with all her decisions. Even joining the cult seemed a half-hearted thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially when she kept talking.
Yeah, while Patty was gone, mm-hmm. she started talking. After Matt flipped the script, so they bought his church, and he was like, well, fuck y'all, I got a trick for you. Mm-hmm. And he started targeting them, like trying to save them or whatever. And when he showed up there with those flyers telling all her business, she couldn't handle it. She was screaming and talking, and then she was watching TV later and smoking mm-hmm. and talking. And, you know, Lori was like, look, this is not what we do, you know. Right. We're not violent. She was like a kid having a temper tantrum. It's like she wanted to be a part of that cult. I don't know if it was to show people, like her fiance, like, see, you know, I told you I wasn't well. Look what I'm doing, you know, mm-hmm. or what. But she was not. She didn't understand their philosophy. I don't think as fucked up as it was.
Right.
She was just, she was so, and like I said, Liv Tyler, I wanted to slap her face every time she was on screen. So I guess she did her job.
She definitely did. And the character was needed because you do need like a gateway between normal and the cult. Mm-hmm. Like you just need that character. Even if you're going to hate that fucking character, you need that character who's kind of like, here's what it looks like when someone joins a cult. Right. And like, even like, I really love the, like, you need to chop down a fucking tree to join the cult. And they pick out some big ass trees too. Like,
yeah,
it's going to be a while. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I enjoy like some of her, like just sheer like flabbergastedness. Like really, this is impossible. Can I just like join the cult like halfway through this tree? They're like, bitch, chop down a tree. You know, we gotta get these paper pads from somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I did like that stuff. I did like her like lack of understanding as far as for the script, because she asked a lot of questions that the audience would have asked, which doesn't happen enough in Lindelof's shit. So I was okay with that. You know, like I need someone to be like, what's up with the cigarettes? So I could be like, what is up with the cig? Right. Thank you, Meg. You know, I needed those moments, even if I ended up hating her for being like, damn, you always asking all no questions and being stupid. So,
right. I agree. I didn't look at it that way, but you're right.
Yeah. Let's talk about Patty since we're on the cult where mm-hmm. we only got three characters. Oh, wait. I forgot about Dean. Four characters. Okay. Patty, who we talked about a little bit, abusive relationship, used to be Laurie's, like, what do you call it?
Patient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when they showed that in the flashback, now that was a legit, like, that answered some questions. Thank you moment for me. But, I love her cause I love her face, which is the perfect blend of Roseanne and Dan. Like it's like they had like the true genetic offspring of those two people.
So you're like, this is Darlene grown up.
Mm-hmm. It's like even more than Darlene. Like this is their secret child no one knows about. Oh my God. Like if you look at her face, it is both of them. Like especially when she's smoking, I'm like, that's you're one of them. So
that's so true.
Anyway, man. What'd you think about Patty and her story arc? Cause it was a major story arc, and especially the way she died just completely flips everything on his head.
Yeah. She, this is another one where I hope that I really am hoping for some flashbacks because I don't want her to be gone for good. And I feel like they psyched us out in the finale because I knew the moment the orderlies put that pepper spray in Kevin's face that this was all a dream. So we really can't trust what happened in that scene, but I do like the idea of him being haunted by Patty and mm-hmm. talking to her next season the way his father is talking to someone we can't see.
Ghost Patty doing the lap dance was everything.
That was, oh my God, it was so uncomfortable. Like,
I loved it because like, in real life, like, and Dowd is grinding on Justin Theroux. Like, that is what just happened. You can't CGI that shit.
No, she was, yeah, she committed. And it, and to the point where when his dad walked away, he was like, Daddy? I mean, you made a, she made that grown man call him Daddy.
Yes. So good. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
but no, I liked her. I liked the character. I mean, and that I hated her. Do you know what I mean? But like, you know, cause there was, she was, but I, she committed to it, and she was one of those characters again. Anytime she was on screen, she was compelling. In the episode where Gladys and Gladys, when Gladys died and she took Lori to the diner,
yes,
and they were talking, she said to her, remember what I said to you in our last session before everything changed? Or what you said to me in our last session before everything changed. And then she said, may I be excused? And she left. And then she had the brown paper bag and she said it. And we were like, okay, I didn't get that she took a shit in that bag. And so I listened to another podcast. Mm-hmm. I figured it wasn't anything good, but I totally missed that she had excused herself to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So everyone's like, oh yeah, she shit in the bag. Neil is probably her husband. But from that exchange where she said, remember our last session, I said, okay, they were probably doctor patient. I just couldn't figure out who was the psychiatrist.
Right. Me too.
Yeah, I like the fact though that it's flips, because the very first time we see them together in the first episode, Lori is asking her, why aren't I on the list, you know, to go to the Heroes Day Memorial thing. So I like the power flip, you know, like before, yeah, Lori was in the position of quote unquote power, and now after. So I thought that was real interesting to see that, but I'm going to miss her, because I think the actress did a really good job, and she was hateful, but she was so good at it, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because, like, to me, I didn't find her to be hateful. I found her to be like cunning, manipulative, diabolical, mm-hmm, even. And on some level, like really, really fucked up because of how she kept Lori in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
mm-hmm,
she's turning people into believers in something that she's even a little too cynical to believe. Like she's setting up things. Even the way she kind of killed herself was more like a fuck you to Sheriff Garvey than it was a like actual, like challenge to him. It was more like, mm-hmm, you know, well, clean this up, bitch, you know?
Right.
So like I'm kind of okay with all those things. But yeah, I found her just to be like really, I don't know, more aware and manipulative than just hateful, at whatever happened. And obviously she had been fucked up by the abuse she had experienced and, whatnot. But I did like her overall point, which was people are acting like nothing happened and everyone's trying to get back to normal, but something fucked up happened and we don't know what it was. Like, mm-hmm, you can't, there's no going back to normal. Now the chain smoking till you die shit, and not talking, bit of an overreaction. I don't think everyone can do that. You know what I mean? I don't think that, I don't know if that was what Patty's goal was, like everyone should put on white and do this shit.
Right.
But I did like that. I thought the scope of her plans was really cool, and how she fucked with people was really cool. Even if completely unrealistic, like, going in everyone's houses and getting the pictures of their loved ones was just one of the, like, no one woke up, no one had an alarm system, no one like pulled out a gun and just accidentally shot the fuck out of some people, like,
right? Yeah,
you know.
And then turn around and then go back and put those fucking dolls in their houses, right? And no one
learned the first time when you took all their shit. Now they're like, oh well, like, so that like that was kind of like a little unrealistic or whatever, kind of evolving that plan. But as far as just acting and dialogue, she killed it. The show where she died was just compelling as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you do have the stuff with Kevin, but just even for just her stuff and going back and forth with Dean, that was cool. And how she almost dies in the plastic to then turn around and die anyway.
Yes.
All that stuff was kind of cool. So, but yeah, I'm gonna miss Patty too. Can't wait for Ghost Patty. If she's doing lap dances and shit, who knows what she's gonna be doing, next year. And also, we'll say it when we get to Kevin. So, all right.
Okay.
Matt, the preacher man.
Yes.
Now he had hands down, in my opinion, the second best episode. The best episode is Guest, in my opinion.
Okay.
With Nora Dunn's character. But his episode where that motherfucker won that money, man, listen, I was at the edge of my seat. I thought that motherfucker was 100% going to go in there and get beat up, robbed, killed, whatever, after he won that money. And it was going to be like, the fuck did the preacher man think he was trying to do? And he got all the way out of there, got his money back, you know, from the dude that tried to rob him and shit.
Yeah.
And gets knocked out by a random rock and wakes up like, well, he thought a couple minutes late, but like apparently days late.
Yeah, like 2 days later.
Yeah, to like save his church, man. Like, heartbreak. Like, everything that is good about this show happened in that episode, in my opinion. Like the tortured feelings, the feelings of almost having hope, and the gut-wrenching carpet pulled out from under you last second thing that they always do. All of that was so good. Him finding the money, even going to the casino as the fucking preacher man. It was just like, are you fucking serious? So, and I like Matt because he was a button pusher. Mm-hmm. And to me, he was annoying as shit at first because I was like, look at this motherfucker, man. Let these people, you know, like think whatever they want to think about their loved ones dying.
Yeah, because he was like, people were trying to go do their grocery shopping and shit. He's standing out there handing out flyers.
Yeah, your husband was cheating. So he ain't in heaven wherever he's at. Tell you that much. But so he was like doing all this, doing the mostest to like convince people that, you know, nobody was shit. And like when he told Nora that her husband was cheating, by the way, while asking her for money. Nigga, if you don't get the fuck out of my house, he's lucky he didn't catch one of them bullets from that damn gun, man. What kind of shit is this?
He damn sure did.
Let me borrow, can I borrow like 10 G's? By the way, your husband is a piece of shit. He was definitely cheating. Yeah, you can get the fuck out. You can borrow two bullets and get the fuck out. So yeah, he was a really cool character. And I like that he still was like nonviolent and got his ass whooped every time he went out there. Like
all the time.
His face stayed fucked up the whole like episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm a big fan of Matt while kind of not liking Matt. I don't know how to, like, I'm a big fan of him being around and his character existing. I mean, he's a down ass priest. He helped bury a body.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I was watching that, I was like, he has done this before.
He came prepared. He's like, hold on, need to close the eyes, do some last rites. And he was like, dude, don't do that shit. He's like, listen, this is how I bury bodies. Okay. Now, this might be your first, but I'm along. They call me the bury bodies kid from way back. So you ain't let me close our eyes. And all Kevin could say was, well, if you touch it, we end on this together. Like, that was it.
Yes. He was like, I would have forgotten something. I might have showed up without the shovel. Right. Just brought one shovel. He had two shovels, blankets, change of clothes, holy water, gallons of holy water.
Yes.
Cause you know that was a secret baptism. You know, he
got it at the end. He's like, God's still gonna bless you. Bye.
Bye. Yeah.
Care what you believe.
Yeah. I love that I didn't see that coming. I didn't know that he would be called. Like, I knew he called someone, but I was surprised when it was Matt. And I like Christopher Eccleston. I'm a big Doctor Who fan and he was the Ninth Doctor. And I'm glad that people are, seeing him, you know, cause he was also in the second Thor. He was the main villain in that, but he's on all that makeup. So I'm glad now that he's doing something that, you know, he's being recognized that, you know, he's a pretty damn good actor. So I'm hopefully see more of him.
And they olded him up, you know, like he looked a little haggard in his joint. And, when you go to his IMDb page, he's a pretty young looking dude, even though I'm sure he's old, but he doesn't look as old as he did in that preacher makeup. Yeah. All right. Dean, I'm assuming.
Yes, definitely.
Cause they made me check everything he did to be everything. Like, so did the other people at the bar see him or like, you know, like,
yes.
Like when he handed Jill that beer, I was like, finally. Oh, yes. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
What'd you think about Dean? Yeah.
I want to believe in, 2% of the world disappeared. that has to be something supernatural. It just has to be. Even though the show is not going to confirm what it is exactly, I think enough weird shit has still happened that, like, the shit with the dogs and the manhole cover flying up and the crack in his wall, it just feels like something was brewing before it happened and even afterwards with the dogs being affected. And I think they said in the first episode, one of the twins, there was a theory that the dogs that are acting weird are dogs who witnessed someone leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're all being weird. Okay. So with Dean, do you remember, I think it was the first episode where Kevin went to see his dad and he said, and he was talking to the voices, whoever fuck he'd be talking to. And he said, they said that they're sending someone to help you, or they already sent someone to help you.
Yeah.
I want to believe that whoever the fuck, like, his dad is not really crazy, that there is somebody or somebody's there talking to him, that Dean is a part of that. When Patty asked him, and who are you? Because we looked, you know, we, you know, cause that's what they were getting dossiers on everybody in the town. He's like, you don't exist. You're not registered for anything. You're a ghost. And he goes, I prefer guardian angel. Like, I want to believe that. When he walked out after Kevin stopped him from suffocating her with that plastic bag, he starts to walk out of the cabin and she makes a noise and he turns his head kind of looking downwards. He goes, oh, shut the fuck up. I tried.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who believe he was talking to Patty because I believe she talked him into, and I don't think she had to do it very hard because she wanted to die or he wanted to kill her.
Yeah.
Putting a plastic bag on the head. Cause when Kevin was walking back in, he said, wait, just wait. There's been a development. So I think, you know, what he had done was what Patty wanted. So some people are saying he was talking to Patty, telling her to shut up. I tried to kill you. Some people like me, I think that was proof that he's talking to
the ghost that,
that whatever this is going on with Kevin's dad, Dean is a part of that. That's what I choose to believe.
Yeah,
the type of shit. If we don't get answers to this,
right?
Fuck Lindelof. That's my thing. I don't care if we never find out about why the people left, but if you start introducing this weird shit like this, and you don't give me an explanation at the end, like the women who pulled up while Kevin was sitting on the curb, and they're like, "Are you ready?" And they're like, "Oh, we thought you were somebody else," and they laugh and drive off. All of that shit better have an explanation, or I'm going to hunt Lindelof down and kick his ass.
Yeah, I wondered if those women were there for his son or something, like to take him off to the cult life or something.
Oh, maybe. Okay. I don't know.
Or if maybe, like, his other personality had hooked up, like, some women coming to pick him up. I don't know. But, yeah, I read the Dean talking to the ghost thing as Dean talking to the ghost as well.
Okay, good.
But, yeah, now you brought that up, maybe – I don't know. Maybe he wasn't. But, the thing I liked about Dean is that he's very matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple weird scenes where, like, he's treated as if he just started existing on episode one of the show.
Right.
Like, he has no history in the town. No one hangs out with Dean. Nobody really knows much about Dean. But then there's, like, moments where, like, Garvey would say something about dude and then be like, oh, Dean. Or something. You're like, what? Like, so do y'all know him or do y'all not know him? Does he exist outside of, like, whatever he does with Garvey in this universe? I'm assuming we'll get answers to that, but, he's a crack shot and he's about catching bodies, which honestly, man, that's something that you gotta have in a homie. Like, was kind of disappointed in, Kevin for not going through with it when Dean was like, look, I'll just kill her. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And Kevin went and saved her. I was like, dude, how the fuck do you think you're going to get out of this?
Oh, when I said in that episode, when they walked in that cabin and we saw that she was tied to that chair, I was like, she's going to die before the end of this episode. Because for her not to means that something bad's going to happen to Kevin. He's going to go to jail. And we know that's not happening. So she's not coming out of that cabin alive.
And she even says, like, I will fucking tell on you.
Yes.
So you can't leave me alive.
Right.
And that's when I was like, oh, she wants suicide by Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, she ain't leaving till she get her some suicide by Kevin. Mm-hmm. And when it didn't happen, I was like, they're still gonna find a way to kill her, because that, you know, it has to be it for this character. All right, Kevin Garvey's dad, what the fuck is his name? Tom? No, not Tom.
It's Kevin Garvey.
Kevin Garvey Sr. is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Glenn. He was only in this thing for three episodes. What'd you think about Scott Glenn and Kevin Garvey Sr.?
I like it, love it. I am, like I said, I hope that he's not crazy, even though I guess if we find out that there are things around talking to him that only he can see, maybe that is the definition of crazy. Right.
Like that was my thing with Kevin Garvey Jr. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, yeah, we see Patty. That don't make him not crazy.
Right.
Like, we're just taking on his point of view, which is crazy person's point of view. The motherfucker's still crazy to 99.99999% of people who are not Kevin Garvey.
Right, exactly. But yeah, I like, you know, what was Scott Glenn in? Like, his name, like, I know who he is as an actor, but I feel like I should know the one big thing he's known for, and I can't place it.
I'll see. Born Ultimatum. You keep going, I'll find it.
Okay. So I like him. I hope he is around next season. I hope we get, and this is this type of supernatural shit that is he crazy or not, or is there someone really talking to him or not, is the type of stuff I hope we get answers to. And I really wanted Kevin Jr. to read that fucking National Geographic, and I was really pissed that he didn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Was that the same National Geographic that he got that had the note in it?
Yes, in a dream.
Yeah, which is weird because I was like, I wanted him to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was just like, here's a sign.
He hasn't. Exactly. And so in that issue, because that's a real 1970, that issue, like the cover, it's a real issue of National Geographic. And there is a article about underwater spiders and how they survive and, you know, breed and all that stuff. And in that same episode that the dad escapes and he's looking for that issue for Kevin is the episode where Christine gave birth. And when she is on the bed and murmuring in her sleep, she says to Tommy, there are spiders underwater. See, that's the kind of Lindelof shit that I'm nervous about. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, why was Christine talking about spiders underwater and then the dad is talking about this National Geographic and on the cover there's an article about underwater spiders? You know, it's like that kind of shit. I'm hoping that's not Lindelof being weird for the sake of being weird.
Yeah, I hope not too, but yeah, I won't be shocked that shit never comes back up. he's most famous, it said, for like, Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, that's right. He was Clarice's boss.
The Bourne Ultimatum at Training Day. I think he's the drug dealer got screwed over by Alonzo at Training Day.
Okay.
I like the very, very end that we find out that his crazy is him possibly just speaking to dead people. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of some Sixth Sense shit, whatever, but at least we got kind of an answer. So we'll see. He was strong as fuck for an old man. I noticed that.
His arms were cut, too.
Yeah, he was knocking people the fuck out. He opened up that fridge that none of them teens could open. Like, apparently that dude got crazy strength to go with his regular just craziness, so... I thought that made him interesting. I still didn't think when he was quote unquote sane, like, I don't think he cleaned up that well, which, I would have loved to see him, like, if he looked like dapper in his sheriff's uniform, I would have been like, okay, but, you know, maybe they should have picked a more handsome looking dude, but, yeah, but he does do the, like, post, rapture, haggardness really good. Laurie Garvey. I hate this bitch. I absolutely hate her. She's the worst. Yeah. She left her family. Mm-hmm. She had white people problems. I know she lost a baby and that is sad. And I can't imagine it because I'm not a man. I'm not a woman. So I have no idea what that kind of loss would do to somebody. But like, even like as a reason, it just still felt like you went so far to deep end, didn't tell anybody and just left. Like, it's not like you don't have two other kids. It was, I just don't like her reasoning. And also, I just don't like that she's so easily manipulated, man. Like, turned out that her best friend Patty fucking played her, man. Like, now she's going to go super hard for this cult that Patty kind of didn't believe in, man. So I don't know, man. I'm kind of let down. I wonder who else in the Guilty Remnant is in on the Gladys murder.
So, yeah, I don't think it's many.
Yeah, like, who else knows Laurie got played? Because maybe one of those people will be the undoing of her, whatever she's going through.
Yeah. I think, you know, how many people were throwing rocks at her? Like 3 or 4?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about it. That's not the kind of thing you because you can't take a chance that everybody's going to be down with it, you know? Right. And it was clearly done for them. Do you know what I mean? It was clearly done to manipulate all of them. So I think Patty got some people she knew would be down with it and kept it at that.
I think the black dude was in on it because he like got some good rock throwing arms. He looked pretty strong.
Possibly.
But what do you think about Laura? Anything else to add?
Nothing different than you said. Yeah. Hater. I there's that part of me that it's like, I give her a little bit of credit because, like you said, it's a horrible thing that happened to her. And then, you know, and there's nothing in real life we can compare it to, you know, you can't say having an abortion or a miscarriage, I guess kind of like a miscarriage, but yeah, it's just that still doesn't excuse leaving the child that you have behind. But I guess that's like the whole point of the show. Again, focusing on what you lost instead of realizing the damage you're causing by focusing on what you lost to the things that are still there.
Oh, you know? And the flashback, like, Kevin's a good dude in the flashback. Like, I know he cheats on her, but like before the cheating shit, like he's trying to help you raise another man's son.
I feel like I agree with you, but I do feel like they hinted at some, like him not showing up for the puppy. Because it turned out Gladys was selling puppies or something, and he was supposed to be there for that appointment. And I think what they were telling us was that, and then the sneaking the smoke and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think what they were suggesting was that she could feel what it is we were seeing in him, you know, like what he later said to his dad that, and when she said, do you want to be here? Like, so I feel like that we were just witnessing the tail end of some shit that seemed like it was building between them, which again, as far as we know, he didn't cheat before that.
Right.
And he seemed like an okay guy, but I do feel like they were having, again, a happily married woman does not, and finds out she's pregnant, she doesn't keep it from her husband.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is like, he didn't seem like, I always expect him to be a piece of shit.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like just, well, of course you leave this motherfucker. Like, I'm surprised he stayed and raised them kids, you know, like that type of motherfucker.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah. She leaves him like, so he was smoking? Like, that's it? Go back.
You're right. Yeah. Anyway. That's true.
Maybe we'll find out more though. They do a good job of being like, and then this thing, and you're like, oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah, he gotta go. Like,
they'll have a flashback to that one time he hit her, and we'll all be like, oh,
yeah, Kevin. There you go. They get in the elevator together. It's like, oh, I know what happens in there. So, and there was one more thing that happened with her character. Fuck, I just drew a blank on her, but I should have wrote that down. There was something else that happened with this character where I was just like, it was just a really unique moment.
Was it the lighter or?
Well, yeah, the lighter was it when her daughter showed up to join the cult?
Yes.
She was so not down with that.
Right.
And I don't know if she was not down with it because she was like, Jill, I know you're full of shit and you're doing this to rebel. Or if she really was like bought into this idea that attachment is bad and that even if her daughter came along, like that would still show her attachment kind of to, you know, her family, like, you know, that which violates kind of which is weird, but it kind of violates the code, like moral or ethics of the cult, which is like, hey, none of this shit is important anymore, guys. Let's just all die as fast as we can.
Right. And how could she possibly really believe that if her own daughter is being there just to be with her and she allows it, that then says attachment is important to you.
Right. And when she says, let's go on with the plan anyway, knowing her daughter is there, she was going to be responsible for Jill's death. Like,
and that's why Kevin was looking at her like, I'm going to fuck you up.
Right.
At the very end. He was not, I thought this was going to bring them together, but yeah, no. When he was sitting there giving her oxygen in the ambulance and he turned around and looked at Lori, I was like, oh yeah, this is done. If he don't want her back no more.
Yeah. She almost got their baby killed, man.
Yeah.
Like she, and did she say it out loud when she said Jill was still in the house?
Yeah, that's the only thing she said. She just said she screamed her name and pointed at the house.
Yeah, man. By the way, shout out to all the people that died because they was in jail. Kevin was flipping people over and walking right by.
When he stopped the one guy from choking the woman.
Yeah.
And then he like put the woman's head up and saw it wasn't Jill. He kept going. I was like, he didn't even point her to the fucking exit.
Nope.
He was just like,
they were like all the white girls in Taken. Like they were just, they were just there to die. 'Cause he was like, not my daughter. Bye.
Yes.
All right. Last character. Gotta end on a doozy. My man Kevin, who I feel like we've all kind of, we've talked about him a little bit anyway and all the stuff, but your overall feelings on Kevin, and do you think he was Brad Pitt the whole time?
I definitely think Kevin has a split personality. I'd be real curious to learn like when it started, because it seems like it started after. I think they purposely did the whole thing where after his father escaped and the whole magazine thing, we saw that he was, I think every time we saw him wake up in the series, it was him being jolted awake on the floor or not really remember, you know, like the only time we saw him wake up as a normal person was when he woke up after spending a night with Nora in her house.
Yeah.
That's it. So they were clearly hinting very early on that he was doing stuff at night that he wasn't remembering.
Like, and he was on medications.
Right. He had all those drugs. Mm-hmm. So I think when he threw those drugs away and still woke up in that car, and Dean was like, come on, you know, what are you waiting for? We were like, oh, well, it's not the drugs. Like, there's something else there. And when the Dean was like, yeah, you came to the bar, we had a conversation, this happened, then it was like, oh yeah, he's Fight Club. He has a split personality and he doesn't even know it. And yeah. I'm really excited about that.
And to throw in
shirts hanging up in the trees, mm-hmm, in the forest.
Yep. And to throw in, you can see ghosts now.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So
like, that feels like an offshoot of some other shit. And it's like, not just split personality, but some other, like, whatever.
Wait,
that is.
Do you think he really saw? Because I took that as a dream.
Like, nah, I think he sat down with his daddy and they was talking, and then fucking Crazy Pants was talking to him too. I think it's foreshadowing. I put it that way.
Like,
I think that was, this is what's been happening to your dad. And Crazy runs into genius, so get used to it, because it's going to happen to your ass. And we're going to have a lot more, quote unquote, dreams next season. By the way, Kevin represents the thing I hate most about Lindelof and this series, which is the dreams. I'm not a big fan of, is it a dream or is it real? I'm not a big fan of that in any form. Because for me personally, as a person that doesn't write, I'm not an author or anything, it just feels like a non-committal cop-out. Like, hey, look at this cool, crazy shit. You're like, oh, I'm really invested. Fucking with you, dog, because that don't really fit with nothing we was talking about. Sorry. Like, I didn't like that. And they pulled the rug from under me like two or three times this season with dream sequences. Mm-hmm. And it makes the regular stuff that happens in the story more murky than concrete. Like, I wasn't sure that deer broke in their house.
Right.
And it really shouldn't be that way, because it's obvious in hindsight after like three or four people talk about it. You're like, oh, so the deer did break in their house, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By the way, that must not have been the same deer that they ran over with the car, because that deer died during the rapture. So like, there's two crazy deers that come in people's house?
I think it's a whole lot. I think like the dogs. I think that they're trying to say that they, you know, that animals have been affected by whatever it is that happened to those people.
Maybe like a deer disappeared in front of them. It's like, I'm Kevin of the deer, man. I'm Kevin Garvey the deer. I'm gonna go in your house and get crazy.
Yeah, Justin Theroux is somebody I never paid attention to. The only thing I could tell you he was in, and I said this on our show, my co-host thought I was crazy, the first Charlie's Angels movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was the one that got out of jail.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, he was walking around with no shirt on.
Yeah, and it was kind of like a Cape Fear type thing where he gets out of jail.
He was Drew Barrymore's ex.
Yes.
And he wanted her back, but he was also crazy as shit.
Yes. And I knew that he was engaged to Jennifer Aniston, but I never paid him too much mind. I don't think I could even tell you exactly what he looked like. Before this series, I thought he was ugly. I just remember thinking he was weird looking. Maybe I'm thinking of how he looked in Charlie's Angels. But I got to tell you, he did some good work this season, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was acting his ass. Like I said.
Oh, yeah.
Not a single actor I can blame any of this shit on. Like, me disliking this is more about the storytelling, than any act. Every actor performed admirably, and every character that was written to be annoying and shit, they played it annoying and shit. Like, it was just really good on their heart, on their part. And, him probably being the best of them, you know, and it's gotta be difficult to do. Like, for me, I know you're saying, like, just sitting down and eating and, like, the regular shit is probably difficult to do, which you're right. I'm sure it is. But for me, the difficult shit is like, this shit didn't happen. Like, I'm doing a whole scene of me walking in the fire and like, now I'm like getting ready to shoot a deer and then I wake up in my car. Like, to me, I'm like, man, what was it like to prepare for a sequence where like, you think you're fucking your daughter's best friend and then you wake, like, crazy, you know, and then you get, you know, bit by a dog and you wake up your hands wrapped up, you know?
Yeah.
By the way, that is the other reason I don't think Amy's fucking him, because she wrapped his hand up.
Yeah, and that was a human bite too.
Yeah, and she was surprised he didn't remember, like, not surprised, but like, you don't remember me wrapping your hand up, do you? Like, kind of like, you're weird.
Yeah, exactly. But overall, next season, I just want to see more of the split personality stuff. Mm-hmm. And I really want to know if he is going, I mean, we know he's a good guy and raising other people's babies, but I think you take it to a whole nother level when a girl you fuck maybe twice shows up with a Blasian baby that ain't yours. Like, that's asking a lot.
Yeah. And you know, I do like the freakouts that he had, like, to get his shirts back. You know what I mean? Like, that made sense to me, because I was in the toaster oven he took apart.
Yeah, for the bagel.
Like, I like that because it did, like, to me, those are the things Lindelof normally doesn't do, which is give you a conclusive, like, now it was, of course, to throw us off, but a conclusive, like, no, there was a bagel in there, guys. We're not going to tease the bagel for 20 episodes. We're going to give you the bagel at the end of 60 minutes. And I was okay with those. Even if some of the bigger arcs are going unanswered. All right, man. Well, look, I think we wrapped this. This is about as good as you can get. Okay, guys. Me and Nina, we broke this thing down like it's never been broken before. If you have questions, of course, you can leave them on the site. And I think we're both looking forward to the same thing next year, which is this Kevin Garvey, like, crazy or crazy, crazy. So.
Yes.
I was going to know how crazy he's going to get next season. And surprisingly, they didn't kill off a ton of major characters, just Wayne and Patty. And I think you can kind of bring them back through dream sequences. So maybe we'll even get to see them. Check out Nina's podcast, Podcast Fandom. If you guys are a fan of The Strain, Karen was on an episode reviewing The Strain with them. So
much fun.
Awesome. She is awesome. I'm thinking I'm going to marry her. I'm gonna ask her.
Finally?
I think I'm gonna go ahead and pull the trigger on that thing. Nobody tell her. But you guys also can check out her website, projectfandom.com. And they have a Facebook group, which is facebook.com/projectfandom. Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. All of it will be right in the show notes, no matter how much I stumble over it right now. Thank you all you premium people who do pay to listen to this. Hopefully you guys are very happy. Even if you hated The Leftovers, you get both perspectives, the person who hated it and the person that loved it. So you can't blame it all on me. We'll talk to you guys next time. Peace.